Well, this week I had a conversation with Bruce and Pauline regarding their time in Kazakhstan, and it was fascinating as they compared the difference between the nomadic nation, the nomadic people of this nation, to the adjoining nation of Uzbekistan, whose people are primarily settlers. And it seemed as if the quality of life was better in Uzbekistan, and correct me if I have misunderstood Pauline and Bruce, but the people there grow crops and eat a diversity of food, which is not possible if you are continually on the move, as are the people in Kazakhstan. And I did hear about some of their delicacies, and wow, you're very brave to have lived there for so long. Anyway, the scripture we are looking at today in our series on prayer comes from Genesis 16, as we've heard from Edith. And this message today is entitled, Hagar's Prayer, The Lord Has Seen Me. Here we see Abram and Sarah, and I just stop here and just, if you go to the very next chapter, in Genesis 17, Abram has become Abraham and Sarai has become Sarah because of the covenant that God reveals to Abraham in Genesis 17, that he will be the father of many nations, as so will it come through Sarah herself. But here we are in chapter 16, and they are still Abram and Sarai, as that covenant has not been yet made. So we see here in this chapter, Abram and Sarah still living a nomadic tent-dwelling life, even though they had paused and dwelt in Canaan for 10 years. But they were not settled in a permanent house or city. They were resident sojourners moving within the land. And the text says that Abram had lived 10 years in the land of Canaan in Genesis 16:3. And this didn't mean that they had built a permanent home or had become citizens of a city. In the patriarchal narratives, dwelling usually meant staying in a region for a season, often with flocks, tents, and household slaves and servants. And there is conjecture, like all source and historical criticism, as to when Abram and Sarah actually lived, but tradition has them dated around 2000 to 1800 BCE, so a long time ago. So Abram and his family were resident aliens in this land, and the Hebrew for that was Gerim. And they were tent dwellers, moving according to pasture, water, and divine direction. And they were non-landowners, even though God had promised a land for them. So into this story, we have the main character in Genesis 16, a slave woman from Egypt called Hagar. She too was nomadic, as she is introduced as an Egyptian maidservant belonging to Sarai. Her name Hagar likely means the immigrant or sojourner, because it comes from the Hebrew Hagar. Her Egyptian origin as a slave to a Jewish family is curious. In her book, Hagar, Rediscovering the God Who Sees Me, author Shadia Hirichi also asks the same question: how did Hagar become a maidservant to this Jewish family? Acknowledging that the Bible gives no information about her origins apart from her ethnicity. However, Hirichi suggests that because in Genesis 12, verse 5, Abraham had people and possessions in Haran, which was in Turkey, a place where Terah, his father-in-law, Abraham and Sarah, lived before moving to Canaan, they too may have acquired people and possessions in Egypt after they left Canaan due to a famine there, and the famine was recorded in Genesis 12, 10 to 20. So Hagar may have been acquired while they were in Egypt. So Hagar's story in Genesis 16 unfolds at a moment of deep tension in the Abram-Sarah household. God had promised Abram a child from his own body, yet Sarah remains barren, a source of deep cultural shame and insecurity. In the ancient Near Eastern world, it was socially acceptable for a barren wife to give her maidservant to her husband as a surrogate. Sarah initiates this plan, hoping to build a family through her. However, when Hagar conceives, her status shifts. The text tells us there is a change in attitude. In verses 4 to 5, the scriptures tell us, Abram slept with Hagar and she conceived. When she knew she was pregnant, she began to despise her mistress. Then Sarah said to Abram, "You are responsible for the wrong I am suffering. I put my slave in your arms, and now that she knows she is pregnant, she despises me. May the Lord judge between you and me." And so we read from this text that Abram responds with, "Your slave is in your hands. Do with her whatever you think best." Then Sarah mistreated Hagar, so she fled from her. So here we have Hagar, a pregnant, vulnerable woman, escaping oppression. And where does she flee? Into the desert. The scriptures tell us the wilderness. Her Egyptian origin links her story to themes that, ironically, later become Israel's own history of affliction, wilderness wandering, and divine rescue. The interesting parallel to the Hebrew story some 600 to 700 years later, when Moses leads the people who were now slaves, so the situation was reversed, out of the Exodus period, which was often placed around 1300 to 1200 BCE. So both stories teach us about affliction, wilderness wandering, and finally, divine rescue, because while Hagar is in the desert, an angel of the Lord finds her and says, "Hagar, slave of Sarah, where have you come from and where are you going?" Now, I find it interesting that the angel does not reinstate her name to that of a free woman, but one still indentured to someone else. She has no identity of her own. She is a slave of Sarah. She has no home of her own, only that of her oppressor, and no clear path of where she is going, only escape. The utter desperateness of her life cannot be minimized. Here was a pregnant woman risking child and her own life, fleeing an untenable situation with no support and nowhere to go. I'm gravely reminded of the millions of women and children today in this very same situation, fleeing domestic violence or war. I think we should pause for a moment and give ourselves over to just thinking about that, just for a moment. However, this is not the end of the story. There is hope and promise. Hagar is found by the angel of the Lord by a spring, a source of water and life, and hope in an inhabitable desert. And this is the first annunciation in Scripture given to a woman, and the first time a woman receives a divine promise about her child. Hagar is the only woman in Scripture to whom God directly promises a multitude of offspring. whereas Sarah will be blessed with similar and far more reaching promises, God bestows upon Hagar his personal blessing of a multitude that cannot be counted. Hagar is told to return to her mistress by the angel and is given a prophecy about her son Ishmael. The angel says, "I will increase your descendants so much that they will be too numerous to count." And then the angel of the Lord also said to her this prophecy, which actually didn't sound terribly exciting or terribly good. The prophecy goes, "You are now pregnant and you will give birth to a son. You shall name him Ishmael, for the Lord has heard of your mercy and misery. He will be a wild donkey of a man. His hand will be against everyone and everyone's hand against him, and he will live in hostility towards all his brothers." So Hagar becomes the mother of Ishmael, whose name means God hears. So Hirichi tells us that the illustration of a wild donkey or wild ass of a man is debated among scholars. One writes, "Ishmael and his descendants will be wayward and headstrong." Another writes, "Ishmael and his kin will be aggressive and combative, prone to conflict." Another suggests that the prophecy is not an insult. A wild donkey lived a solitary existence in the desert, away from society. Ishmael would be free roaming, strong, like a Bedouin. He would enjoy the freedom his mother sought. And the phrase, "he shall dwell over against all his kingmen," could also be interpreted in a number of different ways. He will live to the east of all his brothers, or he shall dwell in the presence of all his brethren. All of these are considered more literal translations, but there is no consensus concerning the interpretation of this prophecy. And so Hagar, in hearing this incredible annunciation and prophecy, says what is central to our message today. "You are the God who sees me." For she said, "I have now seen the one who sees me." That is why the well was called Beer Lahai Roy. It is still there between Kadesh and Bered. In this moment, Hagar becomes the first person in the Bible to name God, calling him El Roy, the God who sees me. And this is not a casual naming. It is a theological declaration born out of her suffering. She experiences God not through inherited tradition, such as Abraham and Sarah, but through encounter. El Roy, a name that proclaims God's attentiveness to the unseen. Her naming of God becomes a counter testimony to the household that mistreated her. And she teaches that divine revelation is not limited to the powerful or the chosen line. This story of Hagar reveals a God who sees, hears, and dignifies those who are pushed to the margins, making her story one of the earliest and clearest biblical testimonies to God's care for the oppressed. Hagar does return to Sarah and Abram, and she bears him a son, and Abram names him Ishmael, God hears. And perhaps Hagar's obedience and possible changed attitude after encountering God in the wilderness not only impacted her, but also Abram and Sarah, as Abram obeys what the Lord has said and promised to Hagar. So Hagar bore Abram a son, and Abram gave the name Ishmael to the son she had born, the scriptures say. And Abram was 86 years old when Hagar bore him Ishmael. My goodness, Some of us here might be that age. It's a horrible thought, isn't it? However, but even the spring's name is significant. In the ancient Near East, especially in semi-arid regions, water rights were territorial rights. A spring belonged to the clan or tribal group whose land it flowed through. And these clans were often pastoral nomads who moved seasonally but still held territorial zones. Boundaries were not marked by fences, but by custom, by treaty and long-standing usage. And this is why disputes over wells appear repeatedly in Genesis. They are disputes over land, livelihood and honour. And this spring is named Beer Lahai Roy, the well of the living one who sees me. A reference to a slave woman, which is remarkable in that culture and in that era. So why does Hagar's story matter to us today, some 4,000 years later? This story highlights God's character of compassion. It is a theology of the margins. Hagar is a slave, a foreigner, a surrogate, a woman without agency. Yet God meets her precisely in her distress. Her story aligns with Israel's own future of Egypt, oppression, affliction, wilderness, and divine rescue. In this way, Hagar becomes a mirror in which Israel later sees its own story reflected. She is not outside of God's concern. She is a prophetic sign of God's compassion for those who are oppressed. In summary, Hagar's story is built basically on two verbs, God sees and God hears. She stands as a witness that God's compassion is not limited by ethnicity, status, or social power. These verbs become central to Israel's history as well. God hears Israel's cry in Egypt. God sees their affliction, and God remembers his covenant. Hagar is the first to experience this pattern. Her son's name, Ishmael, becomes a living reminder that God hears the prayers and voices of the oppressed. And so for us today, as followers of Jesus, Hagar becomes a symbol of God's care for refugees and migrants, a witness to God's presence in suffering, a figure of spiritual resilience, and a reminder that God's revelation is not confined to expected people or places. Hagar's legacy is a God who sees the invisible. And there are times when we have all felt cast out, I'm sure, alone, maybe even oppressed, but certainly unseen. I cannot even begin to say how these feelings at times, even this week, have overwhelmed me for various reasons. But as I was preparing this message, I kept reminding myself that the God I follow is El Roy, the God who sees me, who hears me, who delivers me. Hagar teaches that God sees what others ignore. God hears what others silence. God speaks where others exile, and God blesses where others diminish. Her story is a sanctuary for anyone who has felt unseen.